listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Third and final hour of Miller and Moulton on this first Monday of June. Thanks so much for being with us. Third and final hour along the network anyway. Lake City and surrounding areas, Tampa, St. Pete, Port Charlotte, and Venice. We're just halfway home in the 239. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend and for starting your week off with us. Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com. A lot going on, as there always is. NBA Finals, even at a game apiece. Vegas took game one Saturday night of the Stanley Cup Finals. Panthers try to even things up tonight. Rays are in first by four. Best record in baseball. Marlins are a wild card team. Thank you very much. 60 games into the season. Just got done sweeping the A's, which is what you're supposed to do to the A's. Second place in the East. Let's see how long this lasts, as the Mets and Phillies certainly look flawed. Who knows? Who knows? Actually had somebody text me over the weekend, Mark, and say, you know, with the split season you're advocating, I go, don't go there. No, no, no. I'm an idiot. You're all right. I'm wrong. It's a
Thank
dumb
you.
Idea.
We know.
But there'd only be about 20, 21 games left in said season. Okay, we're trying to make the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. You know, for certain franchises, that'd be a good thing. For others, not so much. 10 days away from the U.S. Open. Got the French Open going on. Boy, talk about a sport in this country. Nobody cares. I mean, honestly, Mark, if we did a poll question in which we said, hey, this coming weekend, there's only two choices on television for you to watch, USFL or the French Open. I don't know if the French Open would win.
It'd be close. It'd be really close.
I mean, that's how much. I mean, this used to be a big deal. That, like an hour and a half ago, you had the Williams sisters, you had a Federer and Nadal. Still got Djokovic, but nah, if he doesn't have anybody to foil against,
big deal. Has there ever been a time that the French Open was really a big deal? Well, you love it. Felipe likes tennis a lot. I like tennis a lot, but the French, a big deal. Are you sure?
I meant more tennis was a big deal. And you're right. I've never been a French Open guy. Certain people had to have gotten to a certain point of the tournament for me to be all in on the French Open. You know, like when Agassi made his run and won it, you know, late in his career, I think it was 99, I was all in.
Well, are you just saying that because Rafa wins it every year?
No, it's the television numbers. NBC took it off of, it was the first major to go off of the networks. NBC made a decision a couple of decades ago that no one's watching the French Open. They dumped it. It for whatever reason, the style, the clay, it doesn't intrigue people the way that Wimbledon and the U.S. Open do. That's all I'm saying.
And also, Felipe, I do think it has something to do with the fact that American tennis, once you got past the 70s and 80s, you know, American tennis in the last 30 years, that's not our surface. You know, even Serena, that was her worst surface. You know, that, and it's weird too, because Venus loves clay. And she said, like, this is my favorite tournament. Yet she won 5 Wimbledons, and I don't even know if she ever won the French. But she said, this is my favorite surface.
That's all.
Yeah, Pete Sampras never won a French Open.
Only made the semis once, mm-hmm. And it was the year, I think, in 96 when they didn't rain at all and the courts played as hard and as fast as they ever had. And he made it as, you know, further than he ever went before, because he could literally play serve and volley tennis because it was like playing on concrete. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you get past on the men's side, you know, after Sampras and Agassi in the 90s, you know, Courier won 2 in the early 90s. Michael Chang won his in 87. I mean, You got an American male story from the last 20 years you'd like to talk about at the French Open?
Do you have an American male story in the last 20 years you'd like to talk about in tennis?
Well, but even Roddick, you know, he made five Grand Slam finals. You know, 20 years ago, he won the U.S. Open, but he didn't do squat at Roland Garros.
And besides, I hear their free samples there are terrible.
Plus, they hate us, which I don't understand. I don't. We bailed their blanks out 80 years ago in a big way. They were there for us in the 18th century. We were there for them in the mid-20th. I don't know why there's not an understanding. You know, the U.S. and the French, Mark, should be like a guy friendship. We don't have to be in touch all the time. We don't even have to always get along the whole time. But if you need me, if you call me and say, hey, they're like, yeah, I'll be right there. Absolutely. What do you need? Yeah, done. And you turn to your wife and she's like, you haven't talked to him yet. I don't know what to tell you. He needs me. I mean, that's what the U.S.-French relationship should be. We don't have to talk to one another forever. But if one of us calls the other, it's like, yeah, okay, I'm there.
And instead, we hang up on the other one.
I know.
Such a beautiful thing. You haven't talked to him in 10 years. That's my guy.
That's right. I don't know what to tell you. Tom called. You know,
I'll see you late tonight. We're going out. That's all there is to it. Got to meet him for a beer.
Yeah. He says he's in town. He's got to talk to me. When was the last time you talked to him? Oh, I don't know. The Obama administration? I don't know. But, you know, don't know what to tell you. He says it's important. Unlike you, honey, when Tom calls and tells me it's important, it's important. You're just telling me to, you know, remind me I forgot the bananas. Just saying. Oh, the tangents get us in so much trouble. Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network. Did you see or hear what happened during the Red Sox-Rays game? I mean, they played three of them over the weekend, but I think it was Saturday. They played a doubleheader.
Played a doubleheader on Saturday.
Right. Did you see or hear the moment during the Red Sox broadcast of, I think it was game one? Have you ever had this happen to you before? Where Siri just starts talking.
Oh no. It happened in the Rays game where there's two Siris in operation here.
That's right. And apparently legendary Red Sox broadcaster Joe Castiglione was letting his audience know that Jose Siri was coming up to bat. And that triggered a response from the other Siri.
Still only one out for Jose Siri. Four men have reached base, two have scored.
Which Joseph? Castiglione.
Wait a minute. Did you hear that?
I don't know where Siri. That came from. That was Siri. That was Siri. Came through on the iPhone. Siri's at the plate. I'm not asking you, Siri. Not this Siri. That Siri.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, damn phones, Mark.
Keep it out of the booth. See, that's what happens. They're all around. You got it on you all the time.
So I just thought.
So Jose Siri triggered Siri.
Right. Right. And I guess now all broadcasters doing a Rays game are going to have to keep that in mind. Man, I can't have the Castiglione thing happen to me. Turn the phone, you know, at least mute it or something. Buzz it. Whatever. So Rays took two of the first three. Final game of that series, by the way, 4:00 today. McClanahan going for the Rays, looking for three out of four.
Boy, and they could have all three because they blew the first game of the series. They were up 4-0 in that game and let it slip away with the bullpen.
Well, and it was a bullpen game, though.
Right.
You know, they did the opener and then the next guy, and they got into the fifth or sixth inning, and they had the 4-1 lead, and then, yeah, just couldn't get out of the inning and ended up losing that one, but came back, won the nightcap, and won yesterday, and now go for 3 out of 4. And, you know, you got to credit the Rays here. This is still during that 39-game stretch where, in theory, everyone they were going to play had a winning record. Well, one of the teams that they ended up playing when they played them ended up like a game or two below 500. But when this 39-game stretch, you know, was coming about, the Rays had played the easiest schedule in baseball. I believe their lead is every bit as big, if not a game bigger now, than it was before they started this 39-game stretch.
What's crazy is how well Texas is playing. Texas is only like a game and a half behind the Rays right now. For as good of the start the Rays have, Texas has just been playing unbelievable baseball.
They just swept Seattle, and they are scoring runs, man. They're scoring like 10, 12 runs a game. They're like a college baseball team. They're scoring so many runs. And they're doing this with DeGrom on the injured list. That's a shock, by the way, Jacob DeGrom on the injured list.
But what is a shock is how well they're playing without him. You're counting on the ace in a big way, and they pushed all their chips in this year, and it's working out right now for the Texas Rangers.
Well, in the last 2 years of free agency, they've spent $800 million. That's not an exaggeration. They've spent $800 million. And then they talked Bruce Bochy out of retirement. Well, Hall of Fame manager and $800 million. I guess you can contend. But also all their signings, Mark, literally every single one. They've signed 7 big money players, 6 of them in DeGrom, and they're all paying dividends. You know, we've seen a lot of teams in a lot of sports spend big money, and it's all like, uh-oh. The Rangers right now are damn near batting 1,000 in the last 2 off-seasons.
And that's how you have nearly the best record in baseball when everybody is just killing it right now. For the Rangers, as David said, they swept the Mariners over the weekend. But the Rays looking to get 3 of 4 from the Sox today, as they do have the best record in the game. Ron Cyrak will talk to us about what's going on in the golf world in 25 minutes. Thank you for listening. Right here, Miller and Moulton. Where else but the Florida Sports Network?
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. Ron Cyrak will join us in less than 20 minutes' time. It was a historic golf weekend. We're 10 days away from the U.S. Open. Our golf buddy Ron Cyrak to join us in 10 minutes' time. Heat have evened up the NBA Finals. Panthers looking to even up the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. But, Mark, we have not mentioned the magic numbers today. 94 days away from Lions and Chiefs. 87 days away from Gators and Utes. And 82 days away, if you're counting week 0, when Notre Dame and USC, they don't play each other, but they do play. There are 7 games in 82 days. If you're just, you know, foaming at the mouth and ready for some big-time college football. So 82, 87, and 94 are your magic numbers. The Bills just signed somebody in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, Leonard Floyd.
That's a good signing. He turns 31 before they play their first game this year. So he will play this season at 31 years of age. But Mark, he's had 9 or more sacks in each of his last 3 years.
And it gives him a little depth with Von Miller coming back from the knee.
Because what happened to the Bills defense after Von Miller got hurt?
Not much, David.
They could not get near a quarterback if they were playing 11 on 10. And it really came back to bite them. I mean, the Dolphins scored all those points against them in the playoff game. The Bengals totally controlled the line of scrimmage and the game. And so Bills think they'll have Von Miller back for the opener against the Jets, which is interesting. Remember, that was a Thanksgiving Day injury against the Lions. That was an ACL, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's 9.5 months later. It's about right. 9.5 months later for a 30-something with an ACL. So if he's on the field, it's hard for me to believe he's going to be, quote, 100%, unquote. But at least now he's got somebody. And remember, Von teamed up with Floyd with the Rams a couple years ago, helped them win a Super Bowl. Had Aaron Donald in the middle. That really helped.
Certainly didn't hurt.
No. No, that really helps. Not a lot of double teams coming your way when you got the unblockable force in the middle. But so just some of the football things that have gone on. You know, there are teams, DeAndre Hopkins is still out there. Where is he going to end up? A handful of teams picked up real salary cap room after June 1st because of the designated cuts that they had put in place. So there's actually somebody now who should be able to pay D-Hop. Question is, Mark, he's 31. He's coming off two down years. Do you think he's damaged goods and he doesn't have another great year in him? Do you still look at DeAndre Hopkins as a one? Because if you do, that's 15, 18 plus million. If you think he's just a really good or elite number two, that's a different story. Like, put it this way, Mark. If the Cleveland Browns are signing DeAndre Hopkins, who do you think's the number one receiver? Amari Cooper or D-Hop?
Yes. That's about what I... No, and I'm not trying to mince this, but I do think, David, I don't know if he's a one in the sense of a... I've got to stop this guy in order to win one. But on a team like Cleveland, where you've got Amari Cooper and a D-Hop, wow, that puts a lot of pressure on a defense. Like, I think that's a perfect situation.
2 years ago, when that season ended, you looked at DeAndre Hopkins, and he was one of the top five receivers in the game. You talked about him the way we talk about Diggs and Jefferson and Chase now. I mean, that's how you talked about D-Hop 2 years ago. Well, it's 2 years ago. He got injured. He had a 6-game suspension. Then he got injured again. He wasn't really inspired to play last year. I think he's going to end up in Kansas City. If you look at them closely, don't get fooled by how great Mahomes is. Travis Kelce is an hour away from starting to slow down. He's 33 years old. Now, I'm not saying he's just going to hit the wall and fall off the face of the earth, but I'm just saying that Kelce's right at the end of his prime. And they lost a bunch of receptions and touchdowns from their wide receiving core this offseason. Remember, their top receivers last year were on one-year deals.
And are both gone.
And so, you sure Skylar Moore and Tony?
And Tony.
Yeah, but see, they're really good when they're the number three, number four guys. Keep them in their role. Now, put a D-Hop. You know, who's not going to get a ton of double coverage because of number 87? And I'm telling you, I think it's going to come down to Cleveland or Kansas City. And Cleveland might be able to offer more money, but we know what Kansas City can offer.
Where would you go if you were D-Hop? I mean, that's what it all boils. I would too. I would take less money and chase the ring.
Yeah, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, you're damn right. Plus, the field's grass. Also, if I'm even worried about my body and I'm 31 years old and what have you, Andy Reid doesn't care about if you're a great practice player or what have you. I mean, Andy's really good at working with you know, ever since T.O., Andy's been really good working with temperamental guys. So I think they'd be fine with D-Hop.
Well, yeah, because it's a lot easier to be that way with temperamental guys when you really need them. I mean, Travis Kelce was on, what, I think, FanDuel TV, where he says we're 100% a dynasty. To me, you walk right up to that line, but you get one more, then you for sure say it. And they need another weapon.
By the way, and D-Hop is not washed either. I mean, last year he obviously served that suspension. He only played 7 games, but he played 2 games with Kyler Murray. And in his first game back from his suspension, he had 103 yards. And in his second and only other game with Kyler Murray, he had 159 yards and a touchdown.
I'm not saying he's washed, but
no,
I'm not
saying
he's – I don't know if he's a true, quote-unquote, one anymore.
Like, Felipe, we all raised our eyebrow when the Ravens paid $18 million for Odell. And I love my diva wide receivers, all right? And I think Odell's terrific. But we all went, damn, 2 major injuries, 30, 31 years old, $18 million. D-Hop is certainly saying what you're saying, Felipe. He's going, well, listen, if Odell got 18, I got to get 18. Are you paying $18 million for him?
I'm just saying.
Yes or no? No. Yeah. But you think of him the way you do. But then there's $18 million that has to go with that. You paying that?
I think he's worth Odell's current contract.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I do think Mark, by the way, a Cleveland or a Kansas City signs him to the 1 year big money deal too. Maybe with an option for a second year. Could even be a mutual option.
Well, and that's where if I'm Kansas City, I win the race by signing him to 2. Give him 2 years, don't pay him as much money. And lock in that second year.
But basically, we're saying, is he a million a game player? Because that's certainly what he's asking for. And that's a pay cut from what his last contract was.
And that part isn't going to go away. So we'll see what D-Hop's worth on the open market. When we come back, we'll switch gears and head to the links. First time in 72 years something happened yesterday. We'll talk about it next.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes before the top of the hour, the final segment of Miller and Moulton along the network in Lake City and surrounding areas, Tampa, St. Pete, Port Charlotte, and Venice. The bonus hour for the 239 awaits at the top of the hour. Ron Syrak, kind enough to join us once again. He contributes to the Golf Channel. He writes regularly at Ron Syrak, SIRAK.com, and that's how you follow him on Twitter, at Ron Syrak. Ron, it's David and Mark. Thanks for your time. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always good to be on with you guys. Pretty special stuff yesterday from Rose Zhang, huh?
Well, and that's why we called you, because, Ron, you're a distinguished golf writer. There is not much you have not literally seen in your career. But you hadn't seen what took place yesterday. 72 years since a woman wins her LPGA debut as a professional. And she's 20. And today she's taking her finals at Stanford and cleaning out her dorm room. I mean, this is an all-timer, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that I really loved about what Rose did yesterday is she did not have her A game. You know, she did not. She made no birdies on Sunday, but she grinded it out, and that just shows to succeed in pro golf, you need the talent to do it, but you need to be competitively tough. You need to have the maturity to know how to roll with the punches, and she showed all that. she was, I think, emotionally and physically exhausted at the end of a very, very long week from her. On Tuesday, before the tournament, she spent 3 hours with the media, doing media obligations. It was not only the press on site, but then there was Golf Channel, ESPN, local television, because it's in the New York City media market. She dealt with all of that and then still figured out some way to get it done on Sunday. That was remarkable.
Well, like you said, Ron, she didn't play her best golf yesterday. Just how high are we going to set the bar for this young lady?
Well, you know, we've talked about this before. Both the men's game and the women's game are in a similar place. They're waiting for their next transcendent star. You know, the men are waiting for the next Tiger Woods. The women are waiting for the next Annika Sorenstam. On both the men's and the women's side, we've hung that mantle on a lot of people who came along, and none of them lived up to it. I think one of the things that reminds me, Rose reminds me of another Stanford sophomore that I covered in 1996 when he turned pro, and that's Tiger Woods, in that she's taken this next step up and she's well prepared to do it. She's won 28 amateur tournaments. She won the U.S. Girls Junior, the U.S. Women's Open, the Augusta National Women's Amateur, the NCAA Individual twice. So she has moved incrementally up. So she's ready for this next step. I think we set the bar very, very high for her. And the fact that we saw that she could handle all that hoopla of yesterday and hang on to win really says a lot about her competitive toughness.
Ron, between the two of us, we did a show about 12 years ago in which it was during this time of year, too. Not, you know, as much going on out of football season. And we asked each other, if you had a sport that you came into a bunch of money and you'd buy into right now, what would it be? And Mark's answer was the MLS. And he's certainly proven to be right. And my answer was the LPGA Tour. And I think it was even before Michelle Wee won the U.S. Open, if you know what I mean. I just thought that, you know, this was going to happen. And it's a lot to put on a 20-year-old Californian. But she went to Stanford, just like Wee and Tiger. Okay, she's won as an amateur, just like Tiger did. I mean, Ron, she's got the best resume in the last 40 years who's not Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah, she won more tournaments at Stanford than Tiger Woods did at Stanford. You know, they both played 2 years there. Yeah, she is. Look, the nobody in women's golf moved the needle as much as Michelle Wee did since Nancy Lopez, and I'll even include Annika in there. Michelle Wee moved the needle enormously, and she never really lived up to the expectations we had for her. Here's a crucial difference between Rose Zhang and Michelle Wee. Is that Michelle Wee, when she was 14, 15, 16 years old, was trying to make a cut on the PGA Tour. Rose Zhang, when she was 14, 15, and 16-year-olds, was beating 14, 15, and 16-year-old players. She was learning how to win. I remember asking Tiger Woods' father, Earl, once, were you ever tempted to turn Tiger pro early at 16, 17, 18, 19? And Earl said, nope, I was never going to do anything to undermine his confidence. My strategy was to build up a mindset of domination. And by the time Tiger turned pro, in his heart of hearts, he believed he could beat anybody. And that's exactly what he did. And I think Rose has taken the same steps along the way.
I want to switch to the men's side because Hovland gets the win yesterday. He's caddying for a college teammate today, 36 holes in a U.S. Open qualifier. It's not going to be too long before we're talking about Victor Hovland and major victories, aren't we?
You know, it's hard not to root for Victor Hovland. You know, he is just a really likable guy. The fact that he's doing this for his friend in one of the longest days in golf, the U.S. Open qualifiers out there. He's been my pick in both of the majors that have been played so far this year. You know, I keep expecting him to have that breakthrough win. I think. You know, he's won on the PGA Tour before. This is the first time he's won in the United States on the tour. I think that's going to be a big boost for him. But he's a breath of fresh air. And look at his posture sometimes. You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Arnold Palmer. He's got that same sort of curved back, stoop-shouldered stance over the golf ball, and he plays with similar passion as Arnold.
I'm not a huge golf analytics guy, Ron, for whatever that's worth, but apparently tee to green, Scheffler was 21 strokes better than the average guy in the Memorial Field, and yet he didn't win. Apparently his putting was that bad. He finished one shot out of the playoff. You know, he kind of had that game with him at the PGA as well. I mean, is Scheffler's putter holding him back from dominating?
I don't think he made a putt over 9 feet at the Memorial, you know, and he was still in there, you know, right to the very, very end. The concerning thing about putters is it gets in your head, man, you know, and when you start to, when the image that you have in your mind when you're over a 7 foot putt is all the 7 footers that you've missed, that's a tough image to shake. Now I think that Scotty, he's got that mental discipline to get past that, but these next few weeks are going to be big for him. He does not want this to linger on much longer. He doesn't want people to start talking about, does Scotty have a putting problem? Because once you're talking about it, it's hard to get that thought out of your head.
Well, and they are already talking about it because, as you said, I mean, there's nobody hitting the ball better right now. The fact that he's able to do this, Ron, you mentioned it quickly there, mentally, how tough is this guy? Because to be able to continue to hit the ball this well when you're putting as badly as he is, that's hard.
It is hard, and I've seen it happen to other people. I saw it happen to Tom Watson. I saw it happen to Nick Faldo. And what can happen when you're not making the putts, it starts to put pressure on the rest of your game. You start thinking, I got to hit the ball closer because I'm not making any putts. And then when you start pressing that way, then it has the domino effect, and then the other parts of your game start to fall apart. So he's got to stem this tide before it gets to that point. In the case of Watson and Faldo both, there were two players that once their putter started to go south on them, they never really got it back.
They were older, though. Okay, you know, Tom didn't win a major after 34.
And probably didn't have quite, although those are two really, really mentally tough people. But Scotty's got a lot of, he's had a lot of success over the last year and a half. So he has a lot of positive memories stored in that brain.
Ron Cyrak, ronsyrak.com, and the Golf Channel. Follow Ron on Twitter at Ron Cyrak, S-I-R-A-K. You know, Rory had spent a lot of time working on his putting the last 2 years with Brad Faxon, and also his wedge play in the last year had gotten noticeably better. Still not in the top half, but noticeably better. He made 4 bogeys with the wedge in his hand yesterday, and he putted like a 12 handicapper. Ron, this seems to be in his head.
Yeah, I had, before this year, I always said that with a wedge in his hand, Rory McIlroy's a 7 handicap. You know, he was not a pro, and he seemed to have fixed it. But it took a huge step backwards this week at the Memorial. The number of times he had a scoring club in his hand and couldn't hit the ball close enough, he's sort of becoming Mickelson-like in that he is a lot of fun to watch because you look at his scorecard and he's all over the place. He's still making a ton of birdies, but he's making way, way, way too many mistakes.
What do you attribute it to, Ron? I mean, is there anything that you can say of why you think Rory's doing this? Because obviously, as you mentioned, he makes enough birdies to win every week, but he's making too many crooked numbers.
I felt this way about Rory from the very beginning. And I was at his first PGA Tour win in 2010 when he was 20 years old. But he has never struggled particularly well. Great players. Tiger Woods won with his B game, probably less than his B game, a lot. And Rory, when he has his A game, is the best player in the world. But what he hasn't figured out how to do is to win when he doesn't have his A game. And sometimes he just gets down on himself. If he hits a couple of those bad shots, it gets into his head and it lingers. He carries it over to the next hole. And the great players learn how to let go of those bad shots learn how to play like Rose Zhang did yesterday without their best stuff. Rory's not good at playing without his best stuff.
He's at that magic age too, Ron. He's 34. We all know Arnie never won a major after 34. Watson never won a major after 34. Okay, you know, and his drought now is damn near 9 years to the month that Rory hasn't won a major. He's, you know, it's not too old to win. DJ won a Masters in his late 30s. We obviously saw what Phil did. But lately, Ron, you know, Koepka at just, what, 31 when he won the PGA. But, I mean, in the last eight majors, I think Koepka's the oldest winner, Ron. I mean, 34, are he's top five in the world, and I feel like we're talking about him like he's on the downside.
Yeah, you know, Ben Hogan didn't win his first major till he was 34 years old and then won nine. But he hadn't won any before that. The fact that, you know, I keep wondering, what's the more staggering statistic? The fact that Rory McIlroy had won four majors by his 25th birthday, or the fact that he's now gone 9 years without winning a major? You know, I mean, and that is just, it is baffling to me. And how many times has he put himself in the position, you know, where he's gone into the weekend, he's gone into Sunday, and it was right there in front of him, and he let it slip away. And I thought that the whole LIV Golf stuff was going to light the fire under him. I thought he was playing with a new passion last year. I thought he was practicing that short game and getting better at it. And I'm sort of very, very surprised that he's taken what looks like to me as a major step backwards this year.
Ron, as always, appreciate your time and your insight. A bunch of major championships coming up on both tours. Safe travels. Hopefully we can catch up down the road.
I'll be at the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach, and that'll be my my next chance to see Rose Zhang. So maybe we'll talk for you from out there.
That'll be awesome. Safe travels. Ron Cyrak, Golf Channel, ronsyrak.com, S-I-R-A-K, and that's how you follow him on Twitter, at Ron Cyrak.
You know, we got to just point at Rory now. There's no more this, well, he was taking on the LIV Tour. That was too much for him. He couldn't be the face of the PGA Tour taking on LIV Golf and continue to win. So he backed off from that, and he quit being the mouthpiece against LIV. Well, now he's not doing that anymore, and he can't win. So how about we just say that Rory has whatever the reasons are, but it's Rory. It's not LIV Golf. It's not the PGA Tour. It's Rory.
And remember, he won the tour championship last year on both tours. I mean, he ended last year strong. Yeah, he didn't win a major, had the lead going into the final round of the Open Championship. Let that one get away. They were going low that day, and Rory shot like even par. But, I mean, he finished last year strong. I mean, you know, six or so months ago, Rory was the number one player in the world. Rahm and Scheffler were trying to catch Rory.
And right now, if I were to give you all three for the U.S. Open to pick one, he'd be picked last.
Absolutely. Absolutely. L.A. Country Club, by the way, hosting the U.S. Open in 10 days.
Open qualifiers going on around the country and in Canada today. The longest day in golf, they called. As we mentioned, Victor Hovland caddying for a buddy that he played college golf with at Oklahoma State.
Did you tell me during a break that Michael Block and his son are trying to qualify?
They're both trying to qualify. One in L.A., the other one in Toronto, because the old man's playing in the RBC this week. Tampa, St. Pete, Lake City, Port Charlotte, and Venice. We'll do it again tomorrow. The bonus hour in the 239's next.